Something that's made the past year of my life way easier? Being a longtime user of HelloFresh. It's America's number one meal kit for a reason, and now's the best time to find out why. Go to HelloFresh.com/FilmCast12 and use code FilmCast12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Slash Filmcast. My name is David Chen, and the place where I'd like to travel to is Daniel Day Kim's bicep. Joining me today is Devendra Hardwar.
How, you know what? That is exactly where I was going. The thing that will save us on this ship is Daniel Day Kim's arms. All hail Daniel Day Kim's arms. Come
indeed,
on.
Indeed. And Jeffrey Cannata.
And I am the unforeseen extra member that will ruin everything.
Welcome to the Slash Filmcast. Of course, those are references to our main review today, Stowaway, a new film that's on Netflix. Science fiction movie. A lot to discuss there. But before we get to that, we also have some what we've been watching for you, some weekly plugs, and a couple of other random bips and bops there. You can find more episodes of the show at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. If you want to support this show, it's very easy to do that. All you got to do is go over to patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can sign up for ad-free episodes as well as After Dark episodes that are exclusive to the Patreon. This week, we got a few interesting topics, but one of them is going to be a discussion of There Is No I in Threesome, which is a movie that Dan Gvozden recommended to us last week. Dan Gvozden from The Amazing Spider-Hawk. Come to think of it.
Yeah, this whole episode is reckoning with Dan Gvozden's recommendations.
It's Dan Gvozden the
fallout
left
of last week. Yeah,
the fallout of all of Dan Gvozden's good intentions is this week's episode of the Slash Filmcast. But it was so great to have Dan on last week. And be sure to check out his podcast, The Amazing Spider Talk Podcast. Or, I'm sorry, Amazing Spider Talk Podcast.
Yeah, either one works.
Either one, according to my...
You have to buy a whole new URL for this, mistake.
Indeed. Okay, There Is No I in Threesome is going to be the After Dark topic amongst a few other topics. But first, a couple of things I want to mention right at the top of the show. Okay.
Did you mention that is only for patrons and you can support the show at patreon.com/filmpodcast?
I think I did mention that it's only for patrons and also that it's for patrons.
Was my plosive too plosive?
It's pretty plosive, Jeffrey. Pretty plosive.
I just want people to know. Supporting us gets you some good stuff, man. I'm just saying.
I would agree. I would concur with that. Also, our patrons voted on what movie we're going to be reviewing next week as well. Yeah. So that's another. Yeah. They're dictating the future of the show pretty much. So anyway, one thing I wanted to mention, guys. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Golden Globes be imploding right now.
You hate to see it. Yeah.
The biggest domino to drop. I mean, there are two big dominoes that dropped today. One of them was Tom Cruise said he's giving back his Golden Globes, which
he's sprinting to return them as we speak.
He's just running the whole way back. Yeah.
Which is just like, okay, cool solidarity, Tom Cruise. I mean, I think there are other insular secretive organizations that he's a part of.
Listen, that might deserve more attention. Tom Cruise says no to cults. No
That's
to
right.
cults, okay?
Tom Cruise refuses to be part of any organization whose rules and beliefs make no sense to anybody.
Indeed.
Maybe part of your system.
Indeed,
okay?
Indeed. We'd already seen that Netflix and Amazon had started distancing themselves from the HFPA, which runs the Golden Globes. Today, the biggest news that happened, NBC said, hey, we're not going to air this thing next year, which is huge blow to the whole entire enterprise.
Yeah, both of the people that tune in and watch the Golden Globes are going to be pissed.
It's going
to
suck.
This whole thing is kind of delicious, to be honest. Like, yes. I'm just here watching the fallout and loving it because I can imagine like the HFPA people who are just like, I imagine a lot of them feel like the New Yorker character, you know, just the lead cartoon dude in New Yorker just hanging around, going on their fancy press tours or whatnot, and sucking off the teat of these companies, these studios. Their whole world is imploding right now. No more fancy trips. Nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I wasn't on the episode that you guys talked about the Academy Awards this year, just a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
But my sort of general takeaway from these two data points at this juncture is I think that awards shows in general are becoming irrelevant.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. are just kind of passing into non-essential, kind of ignorable status,
sure,
even
sure.
among cinephiles. I think I don't think that they have the cultural relevance they once had, and I don't think people care anymore.
Look at you talking about cultural relevance.
Yeah. Jeff. I mean, nominate Avatar and we're back, baby.
We're back. But I mean, at the very least, you could say at least the Oscars has like a certain reputation, right? And I don't know what the Golden Globes have. What do the Golden Globes have?
No, they agreed that the Golden Globes were always, they also ran that kind of just were a setup for the Academy Awards. But I think that there's a whole generation of people that just couldn't care less about either of them. And we're seeing that in the ratings. And I just think that it's interesting to me. I mean, I don't mean to, you know, relitigate the Academy Awards. You guys already did a whole episode on it. But it's interesting to me that in sort of the field that I've focused on for a lot of years, the video game field, you have somebody like Jeff Keighley who's tried so long and so hard to create the quote unquote Academy mm-hmm. Awards for video games. And it turns out, in a remarkable twist of fate, that the Academy Awards needs to be more like the Game Awards than the Game Awards needs to be like the Academy Awards, right? The Academy Awards now is like, well, maybe we should put trailers for upcoming movies in our show. And that's the Game Awards is built around that, right? The awards are the mm-hmm. afterthought in the Game Awards, and the thing that brings the kids to the yard, so to speak, is the trailers.
So what you're saying is make it a pure marketing event and not a celebration.
Seems to have worked pretty well for the Game Awards.
So definitely worked well. So
that's a commentary on also the fact that the Game Awards has grown in popularity mm-hmm. every year for the last few years.
Two intersecting opposite direction lines on the graph of viewership.
Whereas Academy Awards is like falling. I think part of it is definitely how the ceremony is structured, Jeff. I agree completely. And it's more of a marketing event in the Game Awards case. But I would also say it has to do with the popularity of video games versus movies. And certainly over the course of the last year, when a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people have had to stay indoors or been quarantined, the popularity of those two things has gone in opposite directions as well. So
you don't think... I mean, I think
it's also like it's the Game Awards versus E3 and everything too, right? Like this is the new way of celebrating the craft versus we're going to have an industry trade show, guys. And I guess you could come if you could afford to come to LA, right? Like it is a celebration the way that even the industry can't do it. I do think that alone is kind of impressive for the Game Awards. Yeah.
But Dave, do you really think that movies in general have gotten less popular? I mean, obviously people can't go to the cinema to see them in the last year, or most people couldn't, but I don't know if movies as a entertainment medium have actually gotten less popular.
That's a good stat. I'd love to know like if we can narrow that down somehow.
It's tough to say because obviously streaming is very popular, mm-hmm. but even pre-COVID, the number of tickets sold each year has declined basically every year since 2001.
Mm-hmm. And generationally, I don't think movies matter as much
to
younger audiences. I think that's the major thing because their attention is all in the games and
not social. Saying movies aren't dead yet. And especially I'll talk about like going to movie theaters this week. And that was awesome. But like, it's declining. And mm-hmm. if you look at the graph of like tickets sold, it's not a graph you want to be in the industry for. You know what I mean? Versus PS5 units sold, you know, whatever. Like,
it's, right. Well, but is movie tickets sold the only metric that we can? I mean, I think it's a function also of the diversification of distribution models. You know, mm-hmm. like
it's a good call. Yeah. So I think it's complicated, but what is clear is that the Academy Awards is becoming less and less popular. And
that's
the Game
true.
Awards are becoming more and more popular. Right.
Yes.
And there's many factors that lead into both. And it's interesting to kind of see how the Game Awards has grown and like you said, like Academy Awards borrowing stuff from the Game Awards now. It's fascinating. I never thought I'd see the day.
Right.
I don't know that they consciously were like, oh, let's use a thing from the Game Awards. You know, I don't think they
I agree.
Such
I don't think
an
it was
obvious
conscious.
Thing yeah. though. Like yeah. Just slap a trailer in there. Like that's why a lot of people
get
watch
people hype
the Super
get people
Bowl,
hype.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Get
yeah.
people hype. Yeah.
Anyway, the biggest thing I think the Golden Globes had going for them was that TV broadcast. Like, the fact that they're being broadcast, the fact that a lot of people watch it, it gives them the veneer of respectability. Uh-huh. And now that
it's
gone...
It's really a veneer.
Yeah. Now that that's gone, I don't know what they have left. So
It's one of those things, like, looking at the Golden Globes, it's like, I guess if you just act like you're important, right? And this is like a good lesson for life. Just act like you're actually a big deal.
What do you think the Slash Film Cast is, Devendra?
Yes. We're the Golden Film Cast is what we are.
We're the Golden Shower Film... I mean, Golden Film Cast. So the other thing I want to mention is that NBC has basically said, we're not going to air you in 2022, but if you make changes to your organization to make it more diverse and more equitable, then maybe in 2023, it's all going to go back to normal. I am going to bet that it's probably not going to go back to the way it was, is my guess. But we'll see. We'll see. But they have said that that's their plan. A lot can happen in a year, though. Just look at the past year. So we'll see. I wanted to read an email that we got from Andy, who writes into slashfilmcast@gmail.com. This is about the show Line of Duty that Jeff mentioned last week.
Oh, so many emails and tweets I've gotten about this, by the way. Go ahead.
So Andy writes in, quote, "The negativity at the final episode of Line of Duty is highly overblown. The journey is definitely worth it. The first season is actually one of the weak ones. Second season, the best. Third and fourth, very enjoyable. And 5 and 6 offered a degree of resolution. I understand the disappointment, but the conclusion of every season is somewhat of a letdown. And in reality, it may not be the end, though I'd be very satisfied if it were." Andy's talking about like potential future seasons. "Each season is fairly self-contained, but highly recommend 2, 3, and 4. I thought the 6th or final season was an improvement on the 5th. Its narrative failures are not in the Game of Thrones ballpark. The suspensions of disbelief asked of the audience are largely fun, but similar to Game of Thrones, perhaps take the final 2 seasons as a piece to be watched or not, depending on your enjoyment up to season 4. I still highly recommend," end quote. That comes from Andy, writing into slashfilmcast@gmail.com. So
I got a lot of that. Dave. Everybody, there seems to be universal agreement that it's worth watching at least the first 3 seasons, and that most people say the finale that just aired that you pooped on wasn't as bad as perhaps the press around it might lead you to believe, or the hubbub, I should say, around it. Sean the Cabbie, who is the originator of all this, entire fiasco, he wrote me to say he was delighted that we discussed it, and also that he heard that there's going to be a 7th season, so it's not even the series finale.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and you know what, Jeff, all these emails, and I got messages, one of my colleagues, Jonah Robinson, said I should check out the show, you know, so like, I will try to check out the show. How did you stream it, Jeff?
It's on Hulu.
Hulu. It's on, Line of Duty is on Hulu. So,
and you know, the crazy, I love how you say it.
Duty.
No, there's no liquid U though, Dave. You got to do duty, liquid U.
I don't want it to be, I don't want to say duty, you know, because
you don't want to say duty. That's why you have to do the liquid U. You say duty.
Duty. Yep.
The Duke pukes, but the Duke pukes. So,
is that a real say?
Yeah, it's what you learn in acting school. You don't say Duke, the Duke. You say the Duke. Well, because the Duke pukes, but the Duke pukes.
If you were in the Mare of Easttown, you would say Duke. Yeah.
Right? It makes no sense to say the Duke pukes, right? That's what the whole point is to say. It makes no sense. You say the Duke pukes.
Where were we? What were we
I wanted to say that having finished season 1 of Line of Duty, there is no there's no spoiler to this, but I will say I was surprised, knowing this show goes on for 6 seasons, to find that at the end of season 1, the last thing that happens is it does that thing that movies do where it shows text on the screen to tell you what eventually happens to all these people.
Oh my god! Oh, right. So weird,
right?
Pulling an M. Night Shyamalan.
Well, they clearly didn't think they were getting any more seasons, right? Because they're like,
we've seen our show. Yeah, we don't know if we're going to stick around.
Here's what happened to all these. It's like one of those, you know, and then he went on to found the university. And,
Are the next seasons just like whole other things? Is that how
I haven't started season 2 yet, so I don't even know that. But I just thought it was very funny that here's, I'm like excited about, you know, there's five more seasons to watch, and then the season ends and it's like, this person went on to do this, and this happened, or this never happened. Yeah. It's like, what?
Dewey Cox died 3 minutes after his final performance, basically.
So
Jeff, we really need to talk about this. We need to have this out on the show here, Jeff, because on multiple occasions, I have tried to warn you off of something.
Yes.
I've tried to say, like, hey, I've heard this is bad. This has a bad reputation. Yeah. I've heard this is bad. Don't watch this.
And I think specifically for Jeff, it is probably a good thing because you don't see the marketing.
You can't watch
stuff,
the trailers.
Jeff.
Okay. So
yeah, you don't watch the trailers. You stay away from hype, you know.
Yeah, but the reaction I get almost always is never, oh, thank you, David, so much for trying to safeguard my most valuable asset, my time. It is incredible resentment and bitterness.
Yeah.
And just like, you keep doing it.
Like, this effing guy, I can't believe he's effing telling me not to watch this thing. And I'm just like, oh, okay, so should I not give a shit about your title? Like, what would you have me do, Jeff? What would you tell me? Okay. Just tell me what to do and I'm gonna do it.
First of all, I wanna come up with another instance of this so I can have another moment in my head, because I'm not remembering another instance, but I'm sure there's many.
An instance happened this morning on text. But yes, okay. Anyway, it's okay. We don't need to say what was specifically discussed. But okay, go ahead.
It never feels like you're leaping in front of the bullet for me, Dave. It feels like you're gleefully destroying something. Because it's not like, I was thinking about watching a thing. Oh, I heard that was bad. It's more like, I'm 3 episodes in and this is amazing. And then it's like, ooh, guess what I get to tell you?
So I see, buddy. So it's less of the act of conveying the information and more of the tone.
It feels like gleeful dancing. Yeah,
you're crushing the joy rather than preserving the time commitment. You know,
First of all, I think for me, maybe those two things are the same act. You know what I mean?
We know.
But secondly, you know, how should I phrase it? What's a good phrasing?
I don't think your phrasing was flawed. I just think
how do I convey to you that it's not about me having, like, experiencing pleasure taking away Jeff's joy, which I don't. I experience none of.
Well, okay? Let's flip this around and ask this question.
Yes.
If you were, let's say you were starting on Game of Thrones.
Yes.
And I had finished it.
Yes.
And you didn't know anything about
the
ending. Would you, and you're like 2 episodes or whatever, you know, halfway through season 1, and you're like, this show is phenomenal.
I'm with you.
And then would you want me to say what you said, which is the ending is widely regarded as one of the biggest letdowns in the history of television?
100% yes. I would not only do I want you to say that, I would like get down on my metaphorical knees and thank you for saving me from wasting
this,
50 hours.
Just real quick, Devendra. Yep. You are few episodes in, loving it.
Yep.
You're loving it.
Yep.
You will immediately stop.
Yep. There's too many other things out there that I got to do. I'm a busy guy, Jeff. We're all busy dudes.
We've had this discussion before, by the way. Like, I think this comes down to how important we think endings are.
Right.
And how important, like, 100%. Do you think the ending ruined something that is 95% great, which I think is garbage? Like, the journey is it for me. Like, I'm here for the journey. And I hope endings kind of land it, but they don't always do it. And the journeying, you know, is the thing I appreciate more than anything. But we've talked about this, Dave. I think you think exactly the opposite.
I'm also going to say this, that with Game of Thrones example, I think is a little bit different because that was such a cultural force and a huge, like, I watched
and
every
it was
episode,
great.
Did
it
a
was
podcast
great for
about it.
Yeah, a while.
Exactly. Yeah. It was great. It was one of the best things on TV for years. And also, like, I made a lot of connections. I made friends and made money off of podcasting about Game of Thrones. You know, like, so there's a lot of, like, benefits that accrued to me for talking about the show as the show went on that maybe wouldn't be present if society has already moved on from it, right? So so that's just another, like, external factor to this equation. But in general, Jeff, I'm fine with that. I want you to do that. And by the way, it's not just, hey, Jeff, I saw this and I didn't like it. I don't think I would say that. I think it's more like my perception of like the online, you know, viewership as a whole and what they thought of it that I would convey to you, right? If you're just like, if I was just like, oh, Jeff, I saw the end of Line of Duty and I hated it. Like, that's just like, that's, I don't really want to do that. But if I'm like, hey, I saw like 1,000 people said they hated it, you know, like that's more worth conveying. So in short, Jeff, I would never say to you what I wouldn't want you to say to me. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna remember this. Just for future reference.
Surely this will come back to bite me.
Devendra, your stance is, I don't care what people think about the ending. I'm enjoying the ride, so I'm gonna continue the ride.
If I know enough, like the buzz around, especially Line of Duty, is to show that there are some really high moments. Like it seems like it is worth watching several seasons of that show, and I'll probably end up doing that. If it all goes to shit, like that doesn't. Okay, that's a good warning, I guess. Like, maybe I won't, like, blast through it super quickly, but that won't stop me if I'm liking the show, you know?
Yeah, I think that perhaps the reason that I have not heeded your warnings in the past, Dave, is that...
Other than your general disrespect of my opinions, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
Yeah, there's
but,
that.
I think that I like having my expectations tempered.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, well, get ready because you might, a lot of people got disappointed. But if I'm loving something, I want, and I think this kind of comes down to the Unsullied thing too.
It's
related tangentially, is I want to have the experience myself.
It is literally clashing life philosophies, by the way. Like, this is what's happening here.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it.
I want to make the determination. Like, I kind of bristle at the everybody has decided that it's this way thing. And I kind of want to make that determination myself. Now,
I'm really make that easy on yourself, Jeff, by eschewing every sort of marketing, media, and trailers and buzz. Oh, yeah.
It leads to a lot of wasted time and agony on my part, and I will freely admit that. But I know I kind of value that, and I've often come to the opposite conclusion to the masses. You know, I've often had that experience, and I think it's played out on this show a number of times too, where I come to you guys or I'll text you guys something like, oh my God, you guys, this was so cool. And you'll both be like, what did you watch? Everybody thinks this is terrible. And I'm like, no, but I liked it. I'm always guess I'm holding out a little bit for that, especially if I've already experienced a bit of something and I'm digging it, you know?
Got it. Okay.
I don't want you to hold back. I appreciate...
You just issued two contradictory directives.
No, I know. But now I feel bad a little bit.
No, it's cool. It's cool, man. I will just... Don't warn Jeff if something is going to be terrible.
Don't warn Jeff. Gets real quiet.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Unsullied, you got to take Unsullied all the way. Jeff wants to be Unsullied.
And that's fine. Yeah. That's fine. I'll work on it, Jeff. I'll work on it. All right?
That's my promise to you. You're doing great.
All right.
Hey, it's Jeff jumping in here to tell you about our sponsor, Quip. You've heard me talk about my Quip toothbrushes. That's right, plural. I own 4 in this household of mine. I love my Quip toothbrush. But let me tell you about gum. Gum. Gum is something people chew as a way to relieve stress, curb appetites, and most importantly, freshen breath. But many people don't realize that gum can also be an integral part of a healthy oral care routine. That's right. Quip has already reinvented the toothbrush for the modern age, as I mentioned. I love my Quip toothbrushes. Oh, I love them. But now they've done it again, and this time it's for chewing gum. Well, they've launched a new gum that's actually good for your oral health and comes with a dispenser that'll remind you of the one-click candy that you loved as a kid. I love the little dispenser. It's pretty slick, and it looks cool, too. It looks space-age and awesome, like all the Quip products. That's why I love Quip. It feels like a grown-up toothbrush. It feels like a piece of technology. And Quip gum can help prevent cavities and freshen breath when chewed for 20 minutes after eating. It's sugar-free and has tooth-friendly xylitol with 0 calories. And to satisfy your taste buds, Quip has added a long-lasting mint flavor, crunchy tri-layer design, and stamped it all with the classic Quip tongue. The slim, travel-ready dispenser, available in 5 colors, metal or plastic, packs and protects up to 10 gum pieces at a time and fits in just about any purse or pocket for on the go.
And in a world where we all need to be extra safe and hygienic, the quick release button means you can still share it with your friends. No wrappers, no hands, no hassles. Add a gum refill plan for a gift that keeps on giving all year round. Quip's customizable subscription lets you chew and share at your own pace and not worry about running out. Plus, the more you buy, the more you save with bulk discounts on extra gum packs. It's not a substitute for brushing and flossing, but this is a great support for your oral health. Pair it with a Quip electric toothbrush for adults or kids, refillable floss, and more great products. In addition to gum packs, Quip also delivers fresh brush heads, floss, and toothpaste refills every 3 months from $5. Shipping is free, so you can save money and skip the misery of in-store shopping. Spread good oral health habits and join the over 5 million mouths already using Quip. Get chewing for less than $2 per gum pack. And if you go to getquip.com/filmcast right now, you can get a free plastic dispenser with any refill plan. That's a free dispenser at getquip.com/filmcast. Spelled getquip.com/filmcast. You can also find the Quip electric toothbrush, refillable floss, and more in the oral care aisle at your local Walmart. Quip, the good habits company.
Well, let's get to what I've been watching, guys. I had a chance to watch a movie in theaters this week, and it was...
It must be an incredible film, Dave. Like, it must be something you've waited years to see on the big screen, or one of your favorite films of all time, right? Like I did with Scott Pilgrim, right? Right?
I mean... Let's just put it this way. It was a movie where I kept waiting the whole time. Is there going to be some really terrible, cringeworthy anti-Asian racism in this movie? And when I got to the end and there wasn't, I let out a huge sigh of relief.
All right.
Because that definitely was present in his last movie. But the movie we're talking about, of course, is Guy Ritchie's Wrath of Man. Thank you, Devendra. And by the way, I should point out before we get to what we've been watching that you can always use #/tag to recommend things that we should be watching. So feel free to use #/tag on Twitter. If you want to point something out that you want us to watch or if you want to check out what people are recommending to us. So I had a chance to see Wrath of Man in theaters at AMC. We rented out a whole theater and got together with some vaxxed friends to watch Wrath of Man. I'm not yet comfortable. And we'll talk about this later in the After Dark, but I'm not yet comfortable packing it into theaters with a bunch of strangers.
How much, by the way, did Wrath of Man cost you? Like if you actually got the whole theater... How much did it personally cost you to see this movie?
$250. I'm not gonna lie.
That is clearly some wrath right there. Like,
it was really the man that was the most expensive part.
It's a wrath
of it.
On a man's wallet. Yeah.
But what was it like, Dave? You're strolling. I mean, Devendra kind of told us about going to see Scott Pilgrim and that experience of re-entering the cinema.
Yeah.
Did it feel good to sort of be back?
I had so many emotions, Jeff. I'm not going to lie. First of all, I saw it at a mall called Pacific Place. And Pacific Place underwent a massive renovation, like around the time that COVID began.
Is that the place with Din Tai Fung?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, but then like a ton of the stores in Pacific Place closed down because of the pandemic. Mm. So I'm walking through Pacific Place. The entire, like virtually like 90% of the stores are closed. As I'm walking into this place. So it's like I'm walking into like a ghost mall, basically. It's very eerie.
Oh, man. Every mall right now is kind of a ghost mall because I've gone through a couple. But yeah. Wait, important question, by the way. Is Din Tai Fung still open?
It is.
Oh, right.
And indoor dining is open at some percentage of capacity at this point in Seattle right now. And so I'm walking through this eerie ghost mall to get to the thing. And knowing, by the way, that the movie we're going to see is Wrath of Man, which, by the way, had a very polarized reaction. Online.
Yeah, I've seen. I
was actually surprised at how polarized. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, this movie's okay. It was some people were like, this movie effing sucks, and some people said this is great, right?
I read your tweets about it and was very confused.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. It was like my anti Line of Duty tweets, basically. so then we go into the theater And I was just very, very excited because, you know, I used to go to the theater one to three times per week pre-COVID, right? And just being in there felt awesome, you know, to just like be in the theater and like, and then Newbie came up, the pre-movie show with Maria Menounos.
Gotta love it.
And I was just, so I've never been more excited in my life to see Maria Menounos.
And it's like those, that thing in movies where you think she's talking right to you, right?
Yes.
Like when you're sitting there.
Maria, it's been so long since we've seen each other. And I was so happy. And then there was a bunch of trailers that I studiously avoided watching. And I'm like, man, I miss this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fun
thing.
You walk
right back out of that theater.
Walked right back out. But yeah, just seeing it in the theater, like just the aesthetics of seeing it on a big screen with a really loud sound and knowing there's other people in the theater that people I care about in the theater enjoying it with me. It felt great, guys. It felt awesome. And it's not something I'm going to do every week, obviously, because it's not economically sustainable. But
you're single-handedly going to keep the Pacific Theater alive.
Yeah. But
you don't get a Wrath of Man every week. So
yeah,
that's
yeah, I can't. Wrath of Man is a weekly showing. Yeah, but I had a great time. And okay, so the experience of going back to theaters was awesome. And I'm just like, you know what? I remember why we started this whole podcast in the first place.
Yeah,
basically.
Pretty good, turns out.
Yeah. So on to the movie itself. This movie's awesome. I loved it.
I cannot wait to see it. Yeah.
It is, the way I would describe it is Guy Ritchie's Den of Thieves, which is itself, Den of Thieves is itself a brazen ripoff of Heat, right? and so I really enjoyed Den of Thieves. It is corny as hell. The problem with Wrath of Man is it is completely humorless. Like there, it's not Den of Thieves. I think like knows what it is and is kind of winking and nodding and having fun with itself. Wrath of Man has none of that. It's it's ultra serious, but it does have some great things. It has a great cast, dude. Devendra, your dude, your guy, Holt.
Don't call him
McCallany.
Yeah, Holt McCallany. I love
Holt McCallany.
Love him and everything. I also see Jeffrey Donovan is in it, which don't call
Donovan.
Him my guy.
I had just watched another movie on Hulu called Villains.
Yeah.
That had Jeffrey Donovan in it.
Jeffrey Donovan, his one like acting expression. I kind of love it when it fits into things. Yeah.
Do you know
he's an Invincible too. He's a voice in Invincible.
Yeah, he is.
He was Josh Brolin's buddy in Sicario. That's what I first was really knew him from.
Yes.
But Jeffrey Donovan's in Wrath of Man. So the cast in Wrath of Man is awesome. And I mean, when I watch a Jason Statham movie, really what I want to watch is Jason Statham being a badass.
Yeah.
And this
Jason
movie,
Statham with Guy Ritchie, the guy who made Jason Statham, you know, back together. It's beautiful.
This movie completely delivers on that. Like if you are looking for Jason Statham being a badass, this movie has that. It is also incredibly pretentious. What do I mean when I say pretentious? It has a really artsy opening credit sequence. Uh-huh. And then there are chapter titles.
It insists this upon itself.
This chapter title is like "Scorch the Earth" is a chapter title, you know, or "A Dark Soul" is a chapter.
I just saw
title.
That in it's a like, in a superhero movie.
Yeah. And it's like ah, okay, whatever. Like I think that it's a little bit up its own ass, but I had a great time. It's also like a great movie to watch. Let's just be clear. It's a great movie to watch in theaters too. Like it has the visuals and the sound that kind of demand a theatrical experience, in my opinion. But yeah, I had so much fun with this movie, and I'm actually a little baffled at like the polarized reactions. People are really like love or hate this movie. But I had a great time. Have you guys seen Den of Thieves by any chance?
I have not.
No, but I've None heard like good things. I really
okay, so
need to see
I would definitely watch Den of Thieves before you watch this. Especially because Den of Thieves is available freely right now. Because Den of Thieves is like a lot of fun. And this movie is like Den of Thieves but without the fun. And with
it's
more
why would I watch the less fun movie first, you know?
That's what I'm saying. Watch Den of Thieves first because it's available.
More fun.
Why would I do that though?
It's the more fun movie.
It would make this one seem less, you know.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, you're right. Maybe go with this first. Okay, Jeff, what were you gonna say?
I was just surprised because I always feel like Guy Ritchie movies have a sense of humor, or you know, they're always sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudging.
It's true.
And
it's true. His movies have really been all over the place recently. Between Aladdin, The Gentleman, and this. It's definitely been all over the place. I mean, this is way more on The Gentleman side, but it's way less fun than even The Gentleman.
But like, The Gentleman knows that it's being cheeky.
Yeah,
you know?
The Gentleman's like wacky movie, and this and it knew it, and it was really embraced that. This movie is not that at all. He really tries to do something very dark in this movie.
Well, he's like, and if that guy can make the Joker, you know, I can really elevate my art form here. Yeah.
I think the problem with this movie you know, one of the other problems of the movie, it's not really about anything. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about revenge or vengeance or anything like that. It's just a really good genre exercise. It's just like, hey, here's a Jason Statham involved in this kind of action thriller, and bank heists are somehow involved in ways that I'm not going to make clear to you. Oh, also, that's another thing. The trailer for this movie gives everything away. I watched the trailer after I got home, and this is one of those trailers, Devinder, where it's like, wow, like it really, it really tells you the whole story of the movie. So if you haven't seen the trailer for Wrath of Man, avoid it and then go check out the movie. I had a great time with it. I'm looking forward to when you guys have a chance to watch it and we can talk about it. But it's not that I couldn't imagine a better film to go back to theaters with. I definitely could, but this is a solid re-entry plan for me and going back to theaters. So
great.
Yeah. So that's Wrath of Man. It's out in theaters right now. It's the new Guy Ritchie movie. I've also been watching Mayor of Easttown, this new series on HBO Max starring Kate Winslet.
Oh yeah. This is the, she's like a detective type of deal.
She's a Philadelphia
cop. It's her
detective.
Cop show. Yeah.
Episode 4 just aired, and I think there's 2 or 3 more episodes left. It's more than half over at this point. And we have seen a wide variety of HBO kind of limited series, procedural / drama / thrillers.
And specifically this template. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of extremely high variety of quality too. I would say on the higher end, I would put something like The Night Of or The Outsider. Right, I would say like those are pretty solid, and even those, both of those, I would say didn't quite stick the landing for me.
I would say, by the way, on the high end is Sharp Objects, which you still have not seen, and it kills me.
Yeah, I saw the pilot, and I heard it wasn't good. I heard from a Dave Chen-esque figure that it wasn't good, so I decided not to check out the rest
of
it.
But you took that joy out of your life immediately.
Mayor of Easttown, I would say is so. In the, on the low end, I would say is The Undoing, which is like one of the worst things I've seen. Very, very bad and completely pointless. This one, I would say, trends in the mid to high end of these limited series. I would say pretty solid so far, but of course the ending could quickly reveal everything to be very silly. But yeah, I'm enjoying it so far. It's fairly rote and predictable, but you get to see Kate Winslet kind of doing a great job as this tortured detective and really kind of slumming it
Is her family life a mess?
Yes, her family life. Would you believe that her family life is a mess and that she uses work to try to process and redeem herself in some ways?
Too much alcohol.
In a detective show?
I know, it's so bizarre. But yeah, I mean, these shows are kind of predictable. I was watching an episode with my wife, and she literally says out loud, okay, this is the part where so-and-so confesses that they have a terrible secret. And then literally like the moment after that, the character said, I have a secret, you know, I'm like about like
the person who
died, about the person who died. And it's just like, it is a very predictable kind of show, but production values are good. Kate Winslet's great. Evan Peters is kind of miscast, I think, in the show as like kind of this young detective figure who kind of befriends Kate Winslet's character. But there's enough here that I'm going to keep watching to the end. Devinder, you've been watching some of the show as well. What do you think?
I watched the first episode, actually, and, you know, it just felt so familiar. I think the thing is I'm comparing a lot of these shows, especially the ones that involve, you know, cops and a murder or something happening, probably to Sharp Objects right now, because I loved that series. I think that series did a great job of establishing its setting. The mystery was really cool. The mood of it, it was just like great Southern Gothic type stuff. And talk about an ending. I will say the ending to Sharp Objects, which if you haven't been spoiled yet, please try to avoid it, chills me. It is a moment I think about often. Also because of how well executed it was within the show. And it was genuinely surprising too. Like it was just like everything hitting all at once, but also like, yeah, great, great cast. You know, was it Amy Adams in that one? Who I thought was a lot more compelling right now than Kate Winslet is, which is just like, it just feels like slumming it. It feels like Kate Winslet, okay, you know, I'm going to be a shabby cop. gonna, you know, oh, my ex-husband lives across the street. That's hilarious. That's like a sitcom thing. It is. I was watching it with my wife and she was like, this is just one of the most depressing things I've ever seen.
It is very
because
depressing.
It's just like depressing. Gray it's gray Pittsburgh or Pennsylvania, right? Somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Because as the show progresses, you learn more about each one of their lives. Like there's like, you know, I gotta say probably 15 characters on this show. And as the show progresses, you learn about like all of their tragic backstories. Like everyone has a tragic and extremely sad backstory. And you know, four episodes in, I'm just like, this is just so sad.
It's a
like,
bit it's much. Not... There's one character they introduce in the pilot who's just like a young girl who exists to have her life be shitty. Like that is that just feels like, oh yeah. Man, her baby daddy is a piece of shit. The guy, I think it's her stepdad or something, is garbage.
Yeah,
people are beating her up. It is. I just like, oh, I don't. Why am I watching this?
Yeah.
This is the thing where I'm like, this journey seems bad. I don't want to go this. I don't care what the ending is because it's like, I don't want to put myself more through this. It's one of those shows I may go back to if, you know, I'm just kind of bored and I want like another cop thing around, but I don't think I'm going to go back to it. It just feels like I would rather rewatch Sharp Objects and, you know, be in that world again and that aesthetic, because that was also a show that was like incredibly well directed and so stylish and so like cool. There's just so much to it. Whereas this one is very matter of fact. It's very gray. You're in Pennsylvania. It's kind of a shitty town.
It's not very fun. It's not very fun. But you know, I will say this. My wife had some health issues that I'm not going to get into on the show, and this was the perfect show for her to watch while she was recovering.
Could she just not escape from you forcing her to watch a show? Is that more? Like
it? I think it's just more like, hey, this is something that's very, it doesn't demand very much, you know. It's fairly predictable and it's like mildly interesting, and so it was good enough. So, anyway, that is Mayor of Easttown. I don't know if that is appealing to anyone at all, but
Guy Pearce is in the show, you know?
I didn't convince you to watch it. I should point out, by the way, I mentioned The Outsider and Night Of. I would say
those shows we had problems with, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Huge problems. I would say those are kind of like, that's about where you top out in terms of kind of police procedural limited series. In terms of HBO limited series that are like excellent, though, there's, I would say Chernobyl is probably like my favorite HBO limited series of all time. And you got Watchmen and I May Destroy You on there as well. Those are really solid.
What the heck was it called?
Show Me a Hero was really good. Nobody talked about it. Yeah.
Danimora.
Showtime, Jeff.
Is that Showtime? Are you sure?
Yep. Pretty sure. Yep.
Okay.
Escape from Danimora. Showtime.
That's why I haven't seen it yet. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was great, too. Jeff, have you seen Chernobyl yet?
I have not. I have
you
not.
May,
I
you may want to. Just want to wait on that one, buddy. Yeah.
You would, I know. You it just would seems love so that depressing.
One. I think you would really like it, though, Jeff.
I would say not at this moment. It is.
It is a brilliant piece of work. It was ridiculously good, in my opinion.
Ridiculously good. Yeah.
It's really good. Anyway, speaking of something that's not Chernobyl, Mayor of Easttown. It's on HBO Max right now, and I've been watching through episode 4. Devendra, hit us up with what you've been watching.
I've been checking out Demon Slayer, which is an anime series that is now on Netflix, I believe. It is very much a shonen anime series, so it's like one of those fighty ones, kind of like Dragon Ball or Rurouni Kenshin or something. This one's about a young boy whose family is brutally murdered by monsters, by a demon, and his sister becomes a demon, and it is his life's goal to kind of heal his sister and also become a demon slayer. It's right there in the title. This is a fun show. I'm really digging it. I'm mainly watching it because that movie, there's a Demon Slayer movie that's currently in theaters, and I'm thinking I would really love to see like a beautifully animated, you know, anime film on the big screen soon. So I'm like halfway through at this point, I think. I'm trying to finish it before that thing leaves theaters, just because I love the experience of watching well-done animation on theater screens. I think one of my favorite revival screenings of the last like 5 years, I saw Akira at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and just animation is special to me, but on a big screen, like especially a movie like Akira that is so smooth, and you can just see like the effort they put into like every single frame of that animation, because that was also, I believe that was animated for like every frame. Like it wasn't even animated at 12 frames, you know, per second, like a lot of things. It was 24. So it's so smooth. It looks so much better than like most things these days. And this show is a lot of fun. I like the fights. I like the characters. It is very anime in the sense that it can go from being horribly serious and incredibly violent to being silly, like on a dime, which is kind of weird to me. It is not quite getting me the highs of like shonen anime like Rurouni Kenshin did, which is the series I love. But it's good. It's fun. I haven't had time to really devote myself and sink into an anime series lately. So this is a good one. And it's pretty popular now, too. So, yeah, I'm hoping to catch that movie before it leaves theaters. Demon Slayer, check it out.
And Devinder, how did you stream Demon Slayer?
It's on Netflix.
Gotcha. Demon Slayer on Netflix.
I believe it's even like it is a Netflix original or something. Oh. Or at least it is like it appeared there first in the U.S.
Got it. Got it. Check out Demon Slayer on Netflix. That's Devendra's recommendation this week.
Hey, everyone. I wanted to let you know that, you know, like many cat owners, everything I do for my cat is rooted in love. Even when they're being super annoying, I always want what's best for them. So even when they're sitting on my lap and I need to get up, or they destroy all my new furniture, or, you know, I have to let them out several times a day, or even when they make a mess in the litter box, I also genuinely love keeping tabs on my cat's health, which just really helps me prepare for future vet visits. That's why I use Pretty Litter. Pretty Litter is the best litter for your cat. It changes colors to help you detect early signs of potential illness. I found that really useful because I've had cats who have UTI issues and also kidney troubles. So the color changing just helps you recognize issues super early. And cleanup is easier with Pretty Litter too, especially compared to clay litters. It has ultra-absorbent crystals that traps odor instantly and lasts up to a month. When I use clay litters, they tend to be dirty and honestly just very heavy to carry and scoop up. With Pretty Litter, you're just scooping up poop. The pee just kind of dissolves. Pretty Litter is also safer for your cat and, you know, the entire household. A lot of clay litters have irritants that can aggravate allergies and asthma. Pretty Litter's super light crystal base does a great job of minimizing mess and dust. And I also appreciate that Pretty Litter gets to my door safely in a small, lightweight bag. Shipping is free, and I never have to worry about storing bulky containers. I do remember the days when I had to walk around town with heavy litter boxes, and that was just never fun. Love is putting your cat's health first with Pretty Litter. Do what I did and make the switch today by visiting prettylitter.com and use promo code FILMCAST for 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com, promo code FILMCAST for 20% off. prettylitter.com, promo code FILMCAST.
Jeffrey Cannata, let's talk about what you've been watching, because what you've been watching is also what I've been watching.
Yeah, I as we mentioned at the top of the show, I took Dan Gvozdin's advice last week to heart and decided to just check out the show about the show, which he had recommended in his what we've been watching last week's episode. And it is on YouTube. So I figured, why not? I got that fancy new YouTube family account hooked up for me by listening to the show.
Mm-hmm.
So grateful to have it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I said, why not? Give it a shot. Popped on the show about the show. 9 episodes later, I decided, well, I should probably turn this off now and go to bed. I binged 9 episodes of the show about the show back to back. I think it is riveting, fascinating, brilliant. I've never seen anything quite like it. It is an extraordinary descent into madness. It is something truly remarkable. And I mean, there's nothing more meta than this show. The concept of the show about the show, as Dan outlined last week, is that each episode is about the making of the previous episode, which is I think on the face of it, in my opinion, a brilliant idea, just a kind of meta wacky concept. But what the show and the show starts there, right? It really starts as this filmmaker talking about the first episode, talking about the pitching of the show. second episode talking about the making of that first episode. And the reason it can be about the making of is that in order to tell the story of, for example, the pitching of this show, he has to reenact scenes that happened that he was not filming at the time. It's part of the story of how the show was made, but he wasn't filming it at the time. He was just living it. So in the explanation, in the recounting of that moment, he wants to cut to a moment and he has to reenact that moment. So that week, which is about the previous week, he reenacts scenes that happened in real life in the previous week. In order to do that, he attempts to get the actual people who were there to reenact those scenes with him. And if they refuse, which he is totally fine with, he offers them the option to refuse to do that or to participate. If they refuse, he'll get an actor to play them. And we have a number of moments where he now is talking about the hiring of the actor in reference to, in conversation with the person that the actor is playing. So he has literally a moment where the actor is playing the character that he's talking to from real life, but also the actor is playing themselves.
Yeah.
They are part of the story too, because they're in the show.
Yep.
So it becomes this wonderfully, I mean, it reminds me of Adaptation. It reminds me of Schenectady, New York. It reminds me of all that, those wonderful sort of, what's the name of the famous artist that draws the hand drawing the hand? And the stairways that lead to the more stairways. M.C. Escher, yes. Mm-hmm. This M.C. Escher-esque filmmaking, which I find delightful and fascinating. But that's just where it starts. It then becomes this exercise, as Dan mentioned last week, but I don't think he emphasized it sufficiently for my taste. Because it packs much more of a wallop, in my opinion, than he presented. It becomes the filmmaker decides that in order to create this piece of art, which he is devoted to doing, he is going to tell you everything that happened as honestly and forthcomingly as he can. He is radically honest. He has this position of radical honesty where he will say to both the viewer of the show and to the people involved exactly what he was thinking at the time, which includes things like telling his wife to her face that he wants to have sex with another woman that is involved in their lives. And he's doing that.
It's like real life review.
Yeah. But like way more.
Real life, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And his wife is playing herself. So he shoots scenes where they're reenacting fights they actually had. And she's reading the lines, and then the next episode will be about shooting the reenactment with his wife, where she got mad that she had to say the things that she actually said in real life. It is fascinating. And it becomes this completely self-destructive exercise where he is shredding his personal life.
Yeah.
Dave, I think it is fascinating. I have gotten through the 12 episodes that are on YouTube. By the end of it, I almost felt like it was too much.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of it, I was like, this is gone too far. And now it's just, I'm just watching this person destroy people and himself in the exercise of just telling everybody. What it made me realize is lying to someone can be a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not meant to know every passing thought or even deep thought.
Like the ending of TV shows, you know?
Well done.
Yeah. Sometimes you're just gonna
you're nothing
quiet.
If not consistent, Jeff, during this episode.
But I mean, I don't know. I would love to know what you think, Dave, but it it occurred to me while watching it that honesty is a virtue that we should all aspire to a point, right? That the human brain is such that there are things that are just not meant to be externalized. That you will have thoughts. I'm sure you guys are having thoughts about me right now that I should never know. I would never want to know.
Oh, absolutely.
And this ignorance is bliss that we all live in, where we think we can think things about other people, but they don't think it about us, is I think required to maintain social order.
Mm-hmm. So I had seen 1.5 episodes prior to Dan Gvozden's appearance on the podcast last week. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. You know, like, I dig this, but, there's a lot of stuff to watch, so I didn't get around to it. But then he brought it up again on last week's episode. So he had watched it a long time ago, but he treats his guest spot on the SciFilmcast with the respect it deserves, which is he knows that, he knows he's going to get his chance in the spotlight this is the time to recommend something to our millions of listeners. And he's just like, I only have bullets in the chamber.
He's not going to miss his shot, right?
Yes. He's not throwing away his shot, as it were.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, the fact that he used up one of his what we've been watching slots on that.
We only allow 3 per listen. Per guest.
You joke, but I did say, hey, can we keep it to 3? So, because otherwise it gets we can't each throw in 8 things in there, or else it becomes unwieldy. So I'm like, okay, all right. The fact that you're using it on one of those, I'm gonna revisit it. I also binged the rest of the show this week.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's compelling.
It's super compelling. And I recommended it to multiple other people.
Me too. I can't stop talking about it
as well.
Yeah.
Because I recommended it to a friend of mine who's
a
journalist.
And they told people, and so on.
Well, the crazy thing is how few views this thing has.
Yes.
It's absolutely insane to me that this dude is A, as devoted as he is to making this thing.
Yep.
And B, willing to completely destroy his personal life in the creation of it. And it's 4,000 views.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I mean, to be fair, I believe it did air on Brick TV, which is a Brooklyn cable access show.
Nobody watches that.
Yeah.
Nobody
watches that. But yeah, I mean, and the thing is, as the show goes on, it becomes more and more risky, the things he's doing,
Yes.
And then the views go down and down. The first episode has 50,000 views. And then by the end, it's 4,000 views. And that's when he's go ahead.
The crazy thing too is that as it goes on, he constantly is being told that very powerful and influential people think what he's doing is utterly brilliant and are in the position to actually make his show available to a wider audience or promote the show.
We're going to make you a star, buddy.
They know that if they speak to him, they will be on the show. The process will be exposed completely honestly on the show, and all there is for them is downside to interacting with
him. Right. So the premise of the show almost results in the show's undoing.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
It's like real time social shunning. It sounds like.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I love your show and I want to help you. They relay this through intermediaries,
intermediaries.
I love your show and I want it to be, I think it's amazing and I want to do something with it, but I'm not going to get next to you with a 10-foot pole because I don't want what you're going to say about our interaction to be on your show.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty remarkable. Also very sobering, Jeff, because I think the show is brilliant and hopefully Dan Gvozden mentioning it, us talking about it today, will get more people to watch it. So you should go to YouTube, search for the show about the show, episode 1 or pilot. It's on there. And then you can find all the other episodes on there. They're easily accessible. Hopefully we'll get those numbers up. Right. But it just really struck me that here's a guy bearing his soul, pouring out his heart, creating some of the most brilliant work I've ever seen.
Yes.
Work that should be mentioned along the works of Michel Gondry and Spike Jonze.
Yes.
And nobody gives a shit. Like, nobody's watching. Nobody's giving a shit.
Yeah. Like button.
Not enough people are smashing that like button, unfortunately.
Man.
And hopefully, you know, you listening to this will, you know, motivate you a little bit and get these numbers up and help to equalize this great injustice that this brilliant show just is not receiving the attention it deserves.
Let me ask you this, Dave. If you had the chance to interview that guy,
I think
on the show,
happen.
Would
I,
you? But what is the cost?
Yeah. I think it's going to happen. He actually has a podcast. I'm going to try to get him for Culturally Relevant. Because he's doing it. I don't know if you know this, Jeff. He's doing a podcast called like Stories I Want to Tell Before I Die. And basically every day is like a 1 to 3 minute story from his, it's just like a story that he's telling from his, like,
he's just throwing all his goods out, throwing them all out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dan Trachtenberg is convinced that we reviewed, I'm a Sex Addict on the Totally Rad Show at one point. I have no recollection of that at all.
Feels like it should be pretty easy to verify.
I just haven't Googled it. I mean, the guy, he's a filmmaker. He's a teacher.
Kaveh Zahedi is the guy's name. Kaveh Zahedi.
I have devoured like every interview I can find of him in the days since. I just think his lack of compromise to his artistic ethos is inspiring. But also, I mean, the guy has kids and it's like, it just feels like, oh man, if you didn't have kids, I could really get behind this dude. But like, the kids are in the crossfire and a lot of this stuff. And it just, it feels really awful.
It feels
on them.
Absolutely. If you do with the kids. Yeah. Because this is like, we don't know, but like, it seems like what he's doing is going to have like lasting damage, you know, like just based on what we see. Yeah. So that's the thing that's challenging about it.
Destroys his marriage. It's watching a slow motion car accident in real time where the driver is explaining to you that he swerved into the oncoming lane. You know, it's like, it's wild, but it is fascinating piece of art. Like what it's doing with the medium is truly revolutionary, I think. It's just completely insane, but watchable. I mean, unbelievable.
Compulsively watchable, yeah. So highly recommended. It's the show about the show. It's on YouTube. Check it out. And Jeff, I watched that interview you texted me about, the interview that he gave. Basically, he, as you said, uncompromising. Like, he basically believes we should always tell the truth in all cases, pretty much.
Yeah.
And like, he pretty much applies that to his life.
Yeah.
According
Watch
to
how well this goes. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's like totally upfront with the fact that it is not good. It doesn't work out well for him, but he's like thinks that
what's the alternative? What's the alternative?
Yeah. You know,
a life where we don't tell Jeff Cannata that Line of Duty ended badly? Perish the thought. That's the show about the show. Thank you so much to Dan Gavazdin from Amazing Spider Talk for recommending it.
Truly.
And there's also a New York Times article about the show. If you Google New York Times and the show about the show and Kaveh Zahedi, you'll find this feature. Like, this is a feature that is, if what we've described sounds too painful for you to watch, then you can read the New York Times article and get about 30% of the effectiveness of it. So there's a New York Times piece about the show as well. So,
and I mean, we will talk about There Is No I in Threesome in our After Dark, but the entire reason I watched that was because I was like, dude, if Gavazdin is batting this well so far, I gotta follow this. I gotta see where this leads.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I gotta keep following this thread.
He's your North Star right now.
So, yeah. So we both watched There Is No I in Threesome. Devendra skipped it, but we will talk about it in the After Dark, and I have very strong opinions about that. So,
same.
All right. So looking forward to that in the After Dark at patreon.com/filmpodcast. Jeff Cannata, you also watched, so the show about the show is on YouTube. Jeff Cannata, you also watched Jupiter's Legacy, which is apparently based on a comic book that you're a fan of.
Indeed. Mark Miller's comic. It is a comic that I think very highly of. And
I would tell you what I've heard about this, but I'm not going to because
I want to hear what Jeff thinks.
I want to hear what you thought about the show.
Yeah, yeah.
I will tell you what I thought of episode one, which is all I've gotten through. A friend told me that it improves after episode one. Episode one is not good. It is not good. Imagine, if you will, a big Netflix superhero show that ends with an action sequence that looks like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
None of the costumes look good from what I've seen. I think the costumes are fine.
I think how it's shot, all of the action, the bad guys. I mean, the bad guys are like, you know, rubber mask, which is fine. I think that's cool. I'm into that. But all of the action is very strangely... I can only assume it's purposeful.
Right, right. Invincible is kind of purposefully animated that way.
Yeah. Yes. There must be an aesthetic that they are going for, because all of the actors are clearly like sitting in wire rigs, like, you know, stationary in the air, hovering in the air. I mean, just imagine Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. It's like the punchers are the punches. The way it's shot is the same. Like, you know, snap zooms to like a body being slammed into the ground. It looks very, very cheap and very, very hokey.
Huh.
And I can only imagine. I mean, there's no way they didn't know what they were doing. They're not attempting to create, you know, Endgame, Marvel Avengers Endgame. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there is some payoff to that aesthetic later on in the series. I don't know if there's something that will make me go, I kind of get what they were going for. But
the
first episode, it really does not put its best foot forward. And it is doubly problematic in that the show and the comic is about a multi-generational story. It's about characters that we see very young and characters that we see very old and characters that we see in the middle. And the same actors play them. And so we are often watching them with, you know, old age makeup and wigs and fake beards and stuff that I don't think work well. It calls attention to itself. I don't know how you solve for that. It is a difficult conundrum, right? These are superhero. It's a superhero show, and it's Justice League type analog characters. There's a Superman guy named the Utopian, and Josh Duhamel plays him. And I don't know if you cast an old guy in the old version. I don't know if you use digital age. I don't know. It's a hard solve, right? There's no easy.
This should be animated. Probably.
It probably should be animated, but as a live action show, at least the first episode, and hopefully it gets better. I don't know if I'll stick with it. I really enjoy the comic. I think the comic is great. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It just really, really does not give a good first impression as far as I'm concerned. I'm pretty disappointed because I was really looking forward to this.
Can I tell you something, Jeff?
Yeah.
This show has one of the worst Rolling Stone reviews I've ever read.
Oh, really?
One star from Alan Sepinwall.
Ouch.
Wow.
Who is typically pretty generous.
He's a charitable, very talented guy.
I honestly, like, I was thinking about the show too. I'm honestly glad that it is so universally panned, because I'm like, I'm superheroed out at this point. I can take a break from this one. I've seen some clips of this. The style, the show was adapted by Stephen DeKnight, who also did Spartacus on Stars,
I
love that show. Super stylized as well. Like, that show almost did like, you'd call it like cheap 300. Just some things that just don't look good, but it was campy and it kind of worked for that show. So I almost wonder if they're applying a similar aesthetic here, but like cheap superhero, which probably doesn't look as good.
Well, I'm sorry you didn't like it, Jeff. I know you were psyched for this one.
Yeah. I was. I suggested it as a main review. I think Mark Miller is really talented writer and he has come up with amazing concepts, and he's got this big sort of blanket deal with Netflix to turn a bunch of his books into stuff. So this is one of the top tier books as far as I'm concerned, and to have it kind of land with such a thud, it doesn't bode well.
Do they explain the rectangular cod pieces? Just like, it's just like a line on the crotch, which I know that must not be comfortable for anybody.
Certainly not comfortable on the eye.
Yeah.
And on that note, Jupiter's Legacy, streaming right now on Netflix. Jeff was not a fan, unfortunately.
Hey, it's Jeff talking to you about our sponsor, Babbel. For most of us, learning a second language in high school or college wasn't exactly a high point in our academic careers. I tried Spanish, I tried Italian, and nothing stuck. I didn't like the process of trying to learn and take tests. But now,
Thanks to Babbel, the number one selling language learning app, there's an addictively fun and easy way to learn a new language. Whether you'll be traveling abroad, connecting in a deeper way with family, or you just have some free time, Babbel teaches bite-sized language lessons that you'll actually use in the real world. In fact, I've been trying the Babbel Spanish lessons, and I find them to be so easy to work into my daily routine. That's what you want, something you can stick to and be consistent with. Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. I'm not going anywhere yet, but I'm certainly excited for when I start to go to be able to be on the go with Babbel. Babbel designs their courses with practical, real-world conversations in mind, things you'll get to use in everyday life. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. With Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of just 3. Go to Babbel.com and use promo code FILMCAST. That's Babbel.com, promo code FILMCAST for an extra 3 months free. Babbel, language for life.
All right, folks, why don't we get to our weekly plugs?
We're going to do weekly plugs. Plugs.
Weekly plugs, a part of the show each week where we plug something that we've made or that someone else has made that we are a fan of. This week, I want to plug an interview I did for Culturally Relevant podcast with Scott Cease. Scott Cease is actually, I believe, a listener of the show, and he went mega viral recently with a series of TikToks about working at IKEA. That were retweeted by Jim Gaffigan and Patton Oswalt and LeBron James, you know, like all these people tweeting about his TikToks, and it's gotten him a lot of attention. And I watched the TikToks myself like a dozen times because I found them so freaking hilarious. He's a really talented guy. Would recommend you check out my interview with him where we talk about what it was like to go mega viral making TikToks about IKEA. It was a fun chat. Again, you can check that out over at Culturally Relevant, the podcast that's found wherever podcasts can be downloaded. Devendra, what's your weekly plug?
Oh, I want to point you guys to the last episode of the Engadget podcast. It's called What's the Point of Facebook's Oversight Board? And we chat about that so-called Supreme Court Facebook created to like offload big decisions. And their one of their biggest ones came last week when they upheld banning Donald Trump, but also kind of threw back the long-term decision back to Facebook. It's all very confusing, but we had a good chat about it with Carissa Bell from Engadget, kind of diving into all this, because I personally don't think, guys, that Facebook can really oversee itself. And I'm waiting until we have like government structures in place that can actually control social media a little bit. But this is an interesting experiment at this point. It is funny how bad it's going. Yeah,
it's interesting to see how it was covered too. Everyone was Facebook, like Facebook Supreme Court upholds Trump's ban. That was like the headline for like so many places.
But
like the real headline is Facebook Supreme Court declines to make a decision, like, or kicks the can down the road for 6 months.
Just like I guess, real Supreme Court, to be honest. Yeah, like,
I guess that just doesn't get as many clicks. But I was a little disappointed to see like how it was covered compared to what actually happened. In any case, check out Devendra's chat about it on the Engadget podcast. Jeff Cannata, what's your weekly plug?
Well, I'm back on the Dungeon Run this Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time on twitch.tv/thedungeonrun. You've probably heard me talk about it before. I'm really proud of the show. It's our big fantasy storytelling show. It's a Dungeons & Dragons show, but you don't need to know anything about Dungeons & Dragons to enjoy it. It's a story of epic high fantasy with a bunch of characters all trying to figure out this big mystery. And the most recent predicament they've gotten themselves into is pretty dangerous. They're split up, they're on the run, and it is it's really scary for them. This is a really cool point to jump on the story. You can jump in any episode because I recap at the top of the show every week what's the essential information to jump right in. So give it a shot. You can listen to it as a podcast. You can find it wherever podcasts are downloaded. But we do a live stream, like I said, Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Pacific time on twitch.tv/thedungeonrun. You can also watch it on YouTube at youtube.com. I think we have The Dungeon Run there, but if not, just search for The Dungeon Run and you can find all of the past episodes. You can jump on any episode and get caught right up and have a blast. It's really a fun, funny show. It's also family friendly, and there aren't a lot of live play Dungeons and Dragons shows that don't have, you know, F-bombs every 14 seconds. So we're proud of our family friendly, but that doesn't mean the show is for kids necessarily. I mean, it isn't like talked down to or we don't, you know, I think the storytelling and the narrative and the plot and everything is very much fun for adults as well as kids. So check it out. twitch.tv/thedungeonrun.
All right, that's it for weekly plugs. Let's get to our review of Stowaway.
Michael and Zoe, I'm a doctor. I want you to focus on slowing down your breathing. In through your nose, out through your mouth.
Hi, Michael. I'm Marina Bunnett, the commander of the ship. Do you remember what happened on the pad?
I'm a launch support engineer, ma'am. How long was I out?
We took off about 12 hours ago.
12 hours? I need to get back to my sister, please. My sister, she's alone. Please, I gotta get back.
We're not going back.
What do you mean we're not going back? This is a 2-year mission.
2 years is a long time to be away, but this is the opportunity of a lifetime.
I can learn fast.
Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
We are taking the first steps to being able to call Mars a second home.
We're sorry that you missed the filet mignon, but this is the next best thing. We think it's spaghetti.
I should warn you now that Zoe thinks she's the in-flight entertainment.
There's no easy way to say this. Life support is damaged permanently. We only have enough oxygen board for 3 people.
Everyone on board will suffocate before we ever make it to Mars.
That was from the trailer for Stowaway, new film on Netflix right now, directed by Joe Penna. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. A 3-person crew on a mission to Mars faces an impossible choice when an unplanned passenger jeopardizes the lives of everyone on board. This movie has a cast of 4 people.
Mm-hmm.
Anna Kendrick, Daniel Day Kim, Shamir Anderson, and Toni Collette. Those are the only people in the movie.
Pretty good cast.
Yeah, and pretty awesome cast. Yeah, everyone's super talented. Devendra Hardwar. This feels like a movie that is Devendra Catnip. You know,
right up my alley. Yeah,
sci-fi movie, very, very much sort of focusing on the procedures and the details of interstellar space travel, or not interstellar. I guess is it interstellar if it's within the same solar system? Same solar system.
Intrastellar.
Intrastellar. Yeah, intrastellar yeah. travel. What did you think of Stowaway, Domingo?
I love this movie, guys. Like, it is. It is such a weird thing too, because it feels more like a play set in space.
Yeah.
You know, like it is very play-like because of the small cast, but I love almost everything about this movie. I appreciate how like it is a very reserved film. It has incredible sound design. I think the actual, you know, the basic plot is that, hey, they're playing for a 2-year mission to Mars and there's this guy. What's up with this guy? What's he doing here? What do we do with this guy? I think all that stuff, like that drama, also seems like unique compared to a lot of space things that we've seen recently. To me, it feels like, you know, when we ask for like other movies, other space films to maybe be a little more realistic, like Interstellar or Sunshine, even this is what you get. Or The Martian. Yeah, this is sort of like, to me, this is the anti-Martian, you know, like it is. I do love that movie. I think that movie's good, but it's also like, you know, very, very, very optimistic. Very optimistic, like to the point where it's like, oh yeah, is this just American propaganda for colonizing Mars? I don't know. Whereas this movie, I think like shit goes wrong all the time. It's really unpredictable. I think the human drama is really good. I think all the performances are fantastic. There are sequences in this movie, which is just like people doing spacewalks, which I think are absolutely thrilling. So yeah, I love this movie. It is one. This movie is 2 hours long. I didn't even feel it. This movie ended, and I'm like, hey, where's the next act of the movie?
Yeah,
I need more.
I read Tasha Robinson's review of this movie with great interest over at Polygon.com.
Yeah, yeah. She mentioned Sunshine. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually tried to get her on this episode of the podcast. The timing didn't work out, unfortunately. But she begins her review by saying, quote, back in 2007, when Danny Boyle's space thriller Sunshine hit theaters, all the critical and audience response seemed to say roughly the same thing. Danny Boyle wasted a really good, serious space thriller by turning it into a silly space slasher.
Sure.
Bring up Sunshine with someone who's seen it, and chances are high that they'll say some variant of the first half where they're just dealing with technical malfunctions was great. Why did he have to throw in a psycho killer?
Yeah,
now everyone who's ever claimed they wanted the full-length version of the first act of Sunshine has a chance to prove it. Netflix's new space drama Stowaway is basically the somber, reality-driven space crisis movie Sunshine initially pretended to be, and it isn't as satisfying as we once imagined, end quote. That's her perspective on it. I don't think she's a huge fan of the movie.
It turns out a lot of space stuff can be boring, you know?
yeah, indeed. Jeff Cannata, curious about what you thought of Stowaway.
Well, Dave, I guess you could say what I thought about Stowaway is best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Hmm.
It's smart and engaging and tense, making tiny problems immense. It need not rely on outlandish sci-fi to deliver 2 hours of suspense.
Wow. That was a nice, clean limerick, Jeff. Really,
thank you.
Really expertly executed.
I am on Devendra's page 1,000%. I at no point was bored in this movie. I think this is one of my favorite movies of the year.
Wow.
You know, it's a young year, but still, I think this will come up at the end of the year for me again.
It's kind of up there with me. Yeah.
It is. You talked about being Devendra's catnip. Absolutely my catnip as well. I love movies about smart people being smart. I love that. And this movie is smart people being smart. Smart, considered, put in a difficult, untenable situation and forced to make hard choices. A lesser movie would, I think, ratchet things up. This movie is very restrained. Bad things happen, and bad things happen often in this movie, but it feels like more like an Apollo 13, you know, where like the bad things happen is because, you know, bad things happen, not because there's a monster on board. You know, it's really wonderfully restrained. There are moments where it sets up like, oh my God, something bad's going to happen. And then nothing bad happens. You know, it's like, there are these wonderful things where it's just, we're just going to watch them do something that's hard, and it goes the way it's supposed to go, but it's super hard, you know, and that's compelling. And I love how the movie changes up everything. There's no quote unquote villain.
The situation is the villain. Yeah.
The situation is hard, and you have to make hard choices, and it's all shades of gray, and everybody wants to do the right thing and doesn't know what the right thing is. And it's, and also I love how things change throughout it. You know, that there is this delicious dilemma, and then that sort of changes for a while. It's like, it's such a well-made, well-structured movie. All of the effects are really cool. Mm-hmm. It gives you just enough Day After Tomorrow sci-fi where it's like, you know, we're going to just say we can make gravity. You know, it's like, okay, that's probably easier for the filmmaker, so we don't have to do anti-gravity the whole time.
It's also like if you've read a single sci-fi book, right? It is like, oh, it's the rotating thing that makes gravity. We know what that is.
Right. Yeah. It does shorthand when it needs to do shorthand. It explains things when it needs to explain things. I don't know if I would change a single note of this movie. It just feels, I was absolutely riveted throughout it. As you said, Dave, the performances are across the board great. I think this is a fantastic movie, and I really don't understand why more people aren't talking about it.
I'm really glad you guys enjoyed it. I quite liked it as well. I have a few more issues than you guys
except
had
for
with
the
it.
Final minute.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I had a few more issues than you guys had with it, but I think overall it's very good. I actually think the way they explained gravity was really good, in my opinion.
Oh, I wasn't disagreeing with that.
I think this movie does a better job of explaining gravity than the movie Gravity, to be honest.
Absolutely. at one point they're like, we are starting the gravity thing, and you see the gravity thing start.
Yeah,
and
it's like,
gravity.
Wow, this is so cool. And it's
I get it.
It's smart, because not only is it smart, in terms of the thing that they're doing, but like the fact that they're showing it to you in the way that they show it to you means, hey, okay, now they're just gonna have gravity the rest of the movie. Like we don't need to try to simulate some kind of weightless visual effect, right? So yeah, it's smart from a plot and also a sort of film production standpoint. Performance is all great. I think you're right, Devendra. This is very play-like. You know, it's very much like just people having intense discussions. That's like most of the movie. But the parts of the movie that are that do have visual effects, I think the visual effects are really, really well done. Like it's very judiciously handled, very expertly executed.
I thought they would cheap out at certain points, and they didn't. Like they turned
it doesn't feel like they did. Yeah,
things into a spectacle. Yeah,
yeah. There was a few things that I was a little bit disappointed by, but I can't really get into it without talking about spoilers. So I think we should just get to that. But overall, I would recommend it. I think it's kind of an ultra realistic slow burn drama this kind of space dilemma. And if that sounds interesting to you, you should definitely check out Stowaway on Netflix.
And watch it with headphones or a good sound system, because I think that really helps, especially that whole opening sequence, which is fantastic.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get the spoilers for Stowaway starting right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
You're going to see this coming.
No.
But you won't find it because, of course...
You're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret now.
You want to be fooled.
All right, well, we got to talk about the ending, guys.
I was joking, by the way, because I thought it was all... It was a surprising ending, but I was joking that it ruined the entire movie for you. But did it, Dave?
I think the ending is a little bit unsatisfying, but before I get to that, actually, I do want to mention one of the really interesting decisions that this movie makes that I don't think I've ever seen anything like it before is it chooses to give us things only from the perspective of the people on the ship.
Yeah.
Yes. And what I mean by that is
no audio from the,
at no point do you hear mission control. At one point they have like an entire conversation with people back on Earth, and
it's
hear the Earth conversation, like the Earth side of the conversation.
Which it works. Like, it works really well, I think.
I think it does too. I think because you basically feel like, oh, these people, it reinforces the idea that basically these people are on their own, right? Like, they have no one to count on, and they only have themselves. So that's a pretty interesting decision. Another interesting decision is, I don't think, do they ever explain why he ended up on board? Like, other than
that's
it was
one
an accident?
Thing I'm like, I would like a little more. Like, just how did that happen? How does a huge, you know, corporation, apparently, because it's not a government that's doing this mission. How do they miss something like that? Yeah.
Go ahead, it'd be interesting. I didn't go back and watch the opening. I know it's all shot in tight shots at the beginning, and I wonder if there's any...
Yeah.
Hint or audio cue
she
that
says,
even...
So at one point she's like, the engine's a little, like, not
it's
as
like
strong
they have
as
more weight than they're supposed to have or something,
And she's so good, she could tell that by the way the ship feels.
So badass.
Love it.
Badass. But I kind of agree, but I also don't really care. Like, what the detail of, oh, he dropped his wrench and fell in and they didn't know. Who cares? Like, it doesn't... I feel like that's the yada, yada, yada that I don't mind.
Yeah, I don't have a big issue with it either. I think what it made me reflect on is, typically in a quote unquote normal movie like this, the reason why he wound up there would be a major part of the plot.
Sure,
right? Yeah, right. Like it would be he snuck on board for bad reasons, or
which is the tension at the beginning of the movie,
right?
Yeah,
the corporation like sent him there, or you know, like some explanation, or like the corporation is like evil/negligent,
right,
and like that's why he's there, right? And but the movie's just like, nope, not interested in any of that.
I love that it just sort of dispenses with that very quickly, and it also dispenses with this idea of him being a threat to them in any.
Yeah.
You know, tangible way. I just love every genre trope, which I was expecting it to do. It zags instead of zigging, you know, and I love that. It, you know, I expected, oh, he's going to have the fucking alien spores in his nose, or he's going to, you know, there's going to be this happen or that happen, or he's going to, you know, he's going to be a smuggler on board to try to do a thing, take down the corporate. None of that. It's just telling a much simpler, purer story. I think
there's the scene with him with the guy with Shamir Anderson's character and Anna Kendrick and the insulin pen, and we're all like, what's gonna happen here?
Yeah.
You know, you wonder like, is he going to attack her or something like that? Is that what you're thinking? Yeah.
Because then there are three people and he should be fine. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So I really liked the movie. I had two problems with it. Problem number one, it was weird to me that everyone just assumed that he was the one that was going to die. And no one explained that. I mean, Anna Kendrick kind of points it out. She's like, what are we going to do? Just ask him to walk out of the airlock? But the way like Toni Collette and Daniel Day-Kim talk about it, they're like, like he's not going to make it. It's like, what do you mean he's not going to make it? Toni What's going to happen there?
She makes the very necessary but brutal decision that we are trained for this. He's not.
She's leading a team. Like she's
removing one of us makes zero sense to have the novice who knows nothing be the one that we save. I never questioned that for a second.
You thought it was unspoken that they would like kill him. Is that what?
I didn't think it was unspoken.
Like he would be the one to go.
But if you have to kill somebody, there's no universe in which you choose. I did kind of suspect one of them to like volunteer to be the one. Mm-hmm. But I also liked that they all recognize that if you have, you know, three essential pieces and one unessential piece, it doesn't make any sense to remove one of the essential pieces.
Right. Yeah. I guess that you're good point, Jeff. Well said. But I also think like there was not really an articulation of what that means, right? Like Anna Kendrick's the only one that was like, are we going to ask him to walk out of the airlock? Like, what does that mean? They kill him. They ask him to kill himself. Like, what does it mean?
Yeah.
They just kind of assumed, and there was less conversation about that than I think there would have been in real life.
The unspoken thing, I think, is what really gets me. And that's a lot of this movie. Right. Like it doesn't necessarily spell everything out. But if you plant yourself in that situation and you're here with your team who you've trained for years to get, you know, to get here and do this mission, you've left your family for 2 years. You're doing something for humanity, you know, and there's this other piece. So like no one's going to be like, oh, well, I guess everything I trained for, everything that cost me to get here is gone. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that Daniel Kim's character kind of articulates in a sense when he keeps saying, hey, if we've made this decision, there's no point in putting it off.
Right.
We're only endangering ourselves further by like adding emotion into it. That's basically his position is like, we've made this dispassionate and essential decision that is hard.
Yeah.
But once we made that hard decision, why are we even dithering? You know, and I thought that was, it's so cold and calculated, but also like shrewd and scientific.
Yeah.
You know, that's unfortunate, his character.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he's also not a dick about it, in my opinion. Right. Like he tries to save, he sacrifices his life's work basically.
Yeah. That speech is so good where he tells her like, what did you do? I gave up everything. You know, it's so cool.
Yeah. And then the ending, you know, I think that my issue with the ending is not even with the plot, which feels earned. Like it makes sense that she would make the decision, right? So for those who are listening and you are okay being spoiled, right? Anna Kendrick basically makes the decision to sacrifice herself, right?
In kind of the coolest way possible, too.
Yeah, pretty badass. And that, by the way, that whole sequence with like Jimmy, like going up the rope and everything.
Beautiful.
Incredible.
Dude.
Incredible.
Because it's so complicated because they have gravity at the beginning. Yes. So you got to like actually climb and then you lose gravity. But then what does that mean when you're bringing back a big thing? Like, oof.
Dude, yeah. that shot of her like reaching her arm out and watching the tank go.
Yep.
It's heart wrenching.
Agonizing. Yeah. But I think my issue with it is just I think the movie ends really abruptly, guys.
It does.
It's like you want to know what are the like, because the movie has said, hey, even after we survive, like we have like a 2-year mission and all this other stuff is supposed to happen. Like, what is the aftermath? Like, what the whole time we are kind of with these characters in how they feel about this extremely terrible situation. And like, and it just is weird to not get any kind of emotional catharsis about.
You wanted some like on screen text, you know,
there needs to be a denouement. There needs to be a denouement. There needs to be a moment of, you know, them arriving on Mars or
epilogue, something, you know,
I don't know. I do think it is a strange ending. It is a very strange way to end this movie because, like, she does the big heroic thing. She drops the tank. We assume that's enough for them to get to Mars, and then they'll be safe there because they have oxygen production there, I think. So I think we assume that solves the major problem of the movie. You know, conflict resolved, and she can't go back in because she just walked through a solar storm. You know, she is radioactive, but she sees Mars in the distance, and that's the last thing she sees. So I think on a poetic level, I don't know how you can do better than that, especially for a movie that is all about being so with these characters. You know, like, we are just looking at everything through their eyes. This is, so many astronaut movies. The person dies, you know, I'm thinking of Bruce Willis in Armageddon or something. Here it just really hit me because I didn't expect it. But it also felt so absolutely earned. Like, she at least got to see this, you know?
I guess. I mean, the voiceover that plays over the end is like, she's extremely glad that her life got to have meaning as a result of this mission. And I'm just like, yes, it's an amazing sacrifice. It's the ultimate sacrifice that she made. But I don't know that that was my reaction. Like, oh, like, now her life has meaning, you know? Like, I don't know.
I don't think it necessarily said that. It was just like, that was her, you know? That was her intention of the whole thing. And she's still, even if like whatever she was going to do on the planet would have failed or something, I don't know.
I want to hear what you thought of the ending.
I agree with you that it was abrupt. Mm-hmm. When the credits popped on the screen, I was jarred.
Yeah.
I thought we had at least another scene.
Yeah.
And I don't think the movie would have been worse for having some sort of fallout of that, even just back on the ship with the rest of the cast in some way. I don't know. I just feels like I agree with you that it was abrupt. Mm-hmm. It certainly didn't ruin the movie for me.
Yeah.
I agree with Devendra that it is all earned, and it puts a punctuation mark on the movie. It's just not the punctuation mark that I expected.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I definitely
this movie
felt,
jazzed us, right?
Yeah, I felt the you know, abrupt sort of jarring stop, but I also, you know, was kind of sitting. It's one of those ones where you sit there and the credits are rolling a little bit, and you don't reach for the remote for a moment. You know,
if I was in the theater, I would have just sat there through the entire credits. Yeah,
totally. Yeah. I mean, you can't do that with Netflix because you're on to the next movie. But
you are forcibly ejected from this film and moved on to the next film. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was emotional. It was powerful. You know, the character's name is Zoe. You know, my daughter's name is Zoe. It's a powerful scene. And I thought that the voiceover, the return of the voiceover, I don't think I read it quite as literally as you, Dave, in the sense I didn't think it was saying, oh, this moment gave my life meaning. It was this sense of that spirit of adventure and risk and discovery and what space travel has been for humanity, that feeling of stepping beyond ourselves and stepping into the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all these people know that it is... as we say when We Have Concerns, space wants to kill you.
Yeah.
So
well, everything wants to kill you, to be honest, like just everything. Too. Nature wants to kill you. Like, oh boy. Yeah. But I also saw it as like, she basically represented faith in humanity, you know, because everybody else, Daniel Day-Kim's character was the cult scientist, Toni Collette's character, she's the leader. She has to do what's best for the entire crew. And she relayed that story about how, like, she just went out to save that guy who was drowning and she didn't know what would happen. Right. Like,
yeah,
she didn't know if anybody was going to come save them, but a guy was drowning and it was her job and she was there and she had to do the right thing. You could read a lot of like allegorical stuff into this movie too. Like the idea of, people who are in positions of privilege, basically accepting a refugee. And what do you do with them? What do you do with the resources you have when things are incredibly limited? How does that define you as a civilization, you know, because the civilization of that spaceship is four people. I read a lot of things into this. The movie, I feel like, didn't even really dwell on some of that stuff. But the idea that, there is a sense of like, no matter how much we science the shit out of space travel, at the end of the day, there are human decisions we'll have to make and human sacrifices that will also tell the story, you know, of humanity and how incredibly we are. It's not just about the experiments you do on the other planet.
Random side note, by the way, this is probably the only film we will see this year that doesn't have a single white dude in the film.
Amazing.
So that's also just your thoughts on like this being an allegory for society in some way. Yeah. Made me think of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's unique. Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but think about what that must feel like to go, oh, you were doing your job, mm-hmm. and then you wake up and now you're going to be gone for 2 years minimum.
Yeah.
Man.
It's such actually, a crushing
His freak
situation.
Out moment is perfect.
His freak out moment is great. And the trailer begins with him waking up in the in the sort of, what do you call it, stretcher. Mm-hmm. And he wakes up in the stretcher and he kind of like stumbles his way to the window. And then he's like, wait, did we take off? And he starts freaking out. And it's like,
yeah.
Wow, and at that point I stopped watching. I was like, okay, I'm in.
I, of course, you know, as usual, didn't know anything about it. And I loved that it never dipped into, you know, aliens are on the ship and there's a spore in the thing. And I just kept suspecting that we might be going there and it never did. And
it's
I
loved
that movie
Life, you know, which was a thing we saw. I think we even reviewed. I have no recollection of it.
I can't believe more people aren't talking about this movie because it feels like a movie I should be hearing a lot of buzz about. Have you guys heard people not liking the movie or just people aren't watching it?
I haven't heard any bad things. It's just like nobody knows this movie exists, which is the problem with Netflix, you know?
I mean, I guess it could be viewed as slow and, you know, kind of plodding, but I did not feel that way at all. Yeah. I thought it was, I was in from the word go. Yeah, I mean, that first sequence where you're just sort of, you know, right up on the participants and Daniel Kim is puking and, you know, and you're just going through that. I just thought it was so cool. And I love the way, what's her bucket is like in awe and just happy as Daniel Kim is puking. It's just great. It's just
you
great.
You learn so much about those characters from both the launch sequence and also them like landing and dealing with it too, because Daniel Day Kim's character is so woozy. He can't even carry heavy things. So it's Anna Kendrick kind of doing a lot of the heavy lifting. It's like little things like that that I really.
I would totally be him, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Like no amount of training would make me not be able to lose my lunch in that situation. It just seems so impossible. And I think it's brilliant too how. You know, it doesn't feel like a plot contrivance that the captain is unable, like breaks her arm and is unable to, you know, because you would imagine in a situation where she's uninjured, she's the one doing the spacewalk or she's, participating in all that stuff in a much more direct way. And I think it smartly removes her and makes her have to make those hard decisions without the ability to actually, you know, put up or shut up type, you know, it's a well-written script. I loved it.
And bother that they could just 3D print a cast.
Yeah, they 3D printed a cast as well.
So rad.
Yeah.
All right, those are our thoughts on Stowaway. It's streaming on Netflix right now. Be sure to check it out. That's going to take us to the end of this week's episode of the Slash Filmcast. You can find more episodes of this podcast at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from adamwarrock.com. Our spoiler bumper comes from filmmaker and YouTuber Kyle Corwith. Be sure to check out his YouTube channel. This episode was edited by Beatty Zhang. Next week on the podcast, we are going to be discussing Those Who Wish Me Dead, new Taylor Sheridan movie that's going to be on HBO Max.
Why are we doing that one? Dave, let's establish it right now.
It's true. It's because it was voted upon by the fine folks at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
Yeah.
So thanks to all those. Yeah, they're deciding what we get to review. It's a side bonus of being part of the Patreon. Feel free to support us over there at patreon.com/filmpodcast. And for the After Dark, Paper Tigers.
Yes.
Do Paper Tigers, the new Bao Tran movie. I'm looking forward to talking about that in the After Dark as well. That is what is in store next week on the Slash Filmcast. We'll see you next week.